Hey, it's Citizen Cosmos. We're Serge and Anna, and we discover Cosmos by chatting with awesome people from various teams within the Cosmos ecosystem and the community. Join us if you're curious how dreams and ambitions become code.
Hey everyone, welcome to Citizen Cosmos. And today we have Žarko Milošević with us, who is the chief scientist at Informal Systems, who are of course one of the leading contributors to the Tendermint and the Cosmos ecosystem. And we will find out about all about it today from Žarko. And welcome, Žarko, how are you?
Welcome, guys. So very happy to be here and talking with you.
Yes, how are you today?
I'm fine. It's a bit rainy day in Novi Sad. So it's unfortunately we are locked in house because of rain. So luckily we are not locked because of other reasons, but it's a rainy day. So I'm looking forward to finishing with the work and going a bit out. So
I'm actually not very far away from you geographically, but I actually passed Novi Sad a few weeks ago. I'm on the way to Sofia, where
amazing.
I am now.
Yeah, amazing.
So cool. Glad to hear that you guys are okay, because obviously with the latest European lockdowns. Okay, let's skip that. Let's start with the obvious thing and with a small intro. What I would like, and I think everybody would love, is to just tell a little bit about yourself, your role at Informal Systems, and what exactly are you working on lately?
Yeah, so I have kind of, let's say, a formal training in distributed systems. I did a PhD in Lausanne at TPFL a few years ago, and my topic of thesis was Byzantine fault tolerance protocols. And at the time, so this was before, like long time before Bitcoin and all fancy money, and we just studied there the protocol, and at that point it was purely theoretical stuff. And so like there was no any potential application on the horizon. And then, as we all know, that this has changed radically in the last few years. And so I'm kind of, after a small break in industry, I'm again looking very carefully at Byzantine fault tolerance protocols. So what is different in informal to what I was doing before is that we added a bit of formal verification flavor to it. So we have a quite amazing team of like formal verification experts. And then we are trying together with like distributed system engineers to design distributed systems which will be more reliable and more correct. And we try to do this in a team of people with different skills, so that we all, from like the onboard of the project, we try to have different concerns and then ensure that the final product is more correct and reliable.
When you say final product, what exactly do you mean by that? What exactly is the specification that you're working on right now?
Right now, we are mostly focusing on IBC. So we are working on IBC handler, and we also work on the relayer. So this is we implement this in Rust. So this is informal internal team. And so we design protocols. In this case, IBC is like most of it, it's already, let's say the protocols is there. So what we are doing is more like trying to formalize protocol, try to do some kinds of more, let's say, the protocol-oriented security audit. And which we are of the Go code base, and we are implementing in Rust. And we are also trying to, at the moment, we are involved in designing a cross-chain staking protocol. So this is kind of something quite hot and new. And also helping colleagues from Interchain Berlin, for example, with a protocol in Tendermint Go base.
You mentioned there for a second correctness audits. And in our like email intro with Ariane, who's the CEO of Informal Systems, for everybody who's listening, she mentioned in our intro that what you're working on is something to do with correctness and assurance audits. Now, first of all, for everyone who is listening, and I'm sure somebody does understand what it means, but what is an assurance audit in simple terms? What is a correctness or a correctness audit? What's the correct way to say that?
It's a really great question, because we were like, even internally in informal, as people come from different background, we were kind of recently going through the exercise of really formalizing this notion. Especially if you talk about distributed protocols, which are like in blockchain, essentially everything is distributed protocol. We are interested in not just looking at the traditional audits where you are kind trying to find some like maybe low-level programming issues or like maybe bad programming styles or like discrepancy between the documentation and the code. In addition to all those stuff, we are trying to go a step further and try to formalize really understanding of what the protocol should be doing, and then we try to ensure whether it does. So like, as we also don't code ourselves, all the code in the ecosystem, we are not necessarily able to apply the same techniques we are doing for like internal development, which is more like what we try to do is to have something which is more like correct by design, where we have in parallel the protocol design, formalization, and implementation. When we look at the different people code and the specs, we are trying as a first step to formalize this. We try to understand what the code is supposed to be doing by looking at both code and the spec. We write the formal spec in a form of precondition and false conditions of the functions in the code. We formalize this in TLA Plus and then try to generate with the model checker interesting test scenarios, which allow us to essentially exercise the path which you might not be able to do easily with the manual tests. What we try to do really with this correctness assurance is to somehow augment traditional audit, where we look at the code, try to find issues, with something which is more like using, let's say, formal tools. So that also at the end of the correctness assurance audit, you have, in addition to report, where you have findings with a list of bugs or like some, let's say, suspicious stuff in a code, you have also the formal spec and you have the automated tests, which stays after we finish with assurance. So you can use this after.
Could I narrow this down? And please correct me by all means if I'm wrong. Could I simplify it down? Of course, not to underestimate what you guys do, but could we simplify it to the fact that each new blockchain or zone or whatever you want to call it that will come into Cosmos can rely on those audits in terms of how smart contracts in Ethereum rely on security audits. And we can say, here's a new blockchain. They run the correctness audit or the assurance audit. And then we see, okay, here and here and here, we have some holes. Here they should do some fixes, whatever. Is that kind of the thing that we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. So this is what we are hoping for. As we are seeing the increase in the number of Cosmos SDK applications, and especially with IBC launch coming soon, essentially what we try to do is we try to come up with a framework which will more or less for people who are developing SDK applications, they have this as a kind of building blocks. So there are stuff we'd like, sometimes they might work in some cases out of the box. Like for IBC, we plan on having the modules so you can have a test scenarios generated already. If you use IBC, like you are developing your application on top of IBC channels, you will already have like interesting test scenarios just to kind of catch for some correctness bugs. But then also with like small changes in the spec where you add the semantic of your particular application, then we can do even more stuff. So we are kind of trying to do it in a more composable way so that you already have something, let's say, by default. You can only start playing with this and see how it works. And then if we are able to formalize your particular application, then you have kind of full coverage. It's really like the hope is that all zone which enters the Cosmos could have some level of correctness assurance. And then ideally, you know, we'll have kind of almost formally verified code. Like, although this is something which is like maybe a bit too ambitious, but just we are kind of hoping for and going in that direction.
It makes sense because I personally have said it previously, and I think I'm not the only one to say that, of course. I personally think that as soon as IBC launches completely, like, and I'm not talking about just testing in terms of Stargate and Big Bang or whatever, but in terms of where it's not going to be just developers who are going to use it, but it's also going to be, let's say, I don't want to use the words lesser quality, but okay, we all saw with Ethereum contracts how it evolved, right? And the level of development that was required to launch a contract was going down as more and more tools were in place. And I think that in Cosmos, we're going to see even a bigger hole of a lot of chains just flowing and flowing and flowing. And I think something that you guys are doing could be really important for people to make sure. But the question I have is, it sounds that it's not important only to the Cosmos ecosystem, what you guys are doing. I think something what you do, well, could be used anywhere in DLT, where DLT technologies are used. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, essentially, as any startup, we are super ambitious. And so we want to conquer the world. But like just in terms of like making it being more operationalized, have more operational plan, we are targeting Cosmos because this is first, it's our home. And this is where we have most of understanding of knowledge, how stuff work. And also this is where we want kind of to, we are incentivized to have, let's say, more correct software there directly ourselves. But if we talk about fundamentally what we're trying to do there, it's we are talking about deterministic state machines. And so essentially in any blockchain applications, on top of blockchain, whatever layer one you have, you have a deterministic state machine, like being in a form of smart contract or something like SDK or a substrate, we are talking about deterministic state machines. And they are fundamentally faced with the same kind of problem. And also applications we have in mind in the first pass will be also probably very similar. Like we are talking about token transfer as a kind of main driver, and the security models are kind of similar. What we really try to do here is just focus first on Cosmos SDK, because in verification, let's say that the runtime matters and we need to sort of focus and do stuff in order. And so right now we are primarily look at the Rust and Go. All the model-based testing approach we are using is a bit language neutral. So we generate interesting scenarios outside the runtime, and then we have a concept of driver. So we can in theory write driver for any runtime. It's just a matter of, let's say, having time and knowledge of how it works to be able to write a driver, and then you can already benefit from test scenario. And so what we are really hoping for is really expanding our view. So we'll start with Cosmos, and then we are definitely interested in looking in other runtimes, like Ethereum, for example, or Substrate. I don't know when, you know, we'll have resources to do this, but it's definitely on our radar, definitely.
Yeah, it's great that it's language neutral, because obviously that opens the doors for, well, all sorts of things rather than just sticking to Go. Cool. And I'm going to move a little bit a step backwards here. We do have questions in regards to what you do and research more, but we'll come back to that in a second. You mentioned like startups there, and we've looked at your history, which is on LinkedIn, of course. Sorry, you know, social networks. They say a lot about the person. And you've worked for Interchain Foundation before, you've worked for Tendermint, you worked for a few other companies, but what's your personal blockchain story, especially being a researcher or a scientist? I don't know what word you prefer here. Of course, you just said that you were doing a PhD in it before it was popular. So, you know, this is already a huge part of the story, but if you could expand.
So after I did my PhD, I worked in industry as an engineer in Switzerland for a few years. I was working for two companies there, mostly developing distributed systems in Scala and Java. And then essentially after some period of time living in Switzerland, the family decided to move back to Serbia. And then I actually joined university here. The university model in Serbia is, let's say, not ideal. You normally need to do something aside. And so I was looking for what I could do aside. And then I stumbled upon Tendermint. And so I remember I was looking at the Tendermint web page, and there was having Byzantine state machine replication at their front page, like the landing page. You see this, and I was like, "Oh my god, these guys are like crazy! Who would advertise themselves as like doing this thing?" Because in academia, we were sort of like the whole effort was trying to kind of hide this, you know, to say that performance is not too bad, you know, you don't need to see this, you don't need to expose this. And then the guy were having a startup, and they were like putting this in a landing page. And then even more, like, interestingly, they are having on a hiring page, they're having a job for, I think it was called research scientist or something like this, where they were asking for people familiar with like PBFT and DLS, you know, and someone who could design BFT protocols. And I was like, there is no way that people would be paying me to do this. Like, I would do this for free. And so, like, this is how I met Bucky and Jay. And at that time, the company was All in Bits, or now they're called Tendermint. So I joined and started working with them on Tendermint. And this is more or less how I enter in the blockchain space. So before that, I was not really into like Bitcoin or Ethereum. I was just hearing, you know, something is happening, but I didn't have time to really look carefully into this. But then with Tendermint, I got exposed to the blockchain ecosystem, meet people. And then later, at one point with Bucky, we kind of focused more on Interchain, hired like a research and engineering team there, and then spin it off into Informa. So my blockchain story is pretty much Tendermint or Cosmos oriented. I was just moving entities, but it's basically more or less like Tendermint or Cosmos related, basically.
So how did you find your area of specialization?
I wanted to do distributed systems because somehow I was always fascinated by the fact that computation can essentially be executed between multiple computers. Like just the fact that you are constrained by the single computer resources was sort of always a bit ridiculous to me. So I was kind of from the already bachelor interesting in distributed systems. And then at EPFL, they have two very strong labs who are doing fault tolerant distributed systems. So like during my master, I get to know basically both of those labs, and then they were having open PhD positions. So then I joined distributed system lab at that time with Professor Andrew Schipper, who is like very well-known person in like distributed system research community. And then there, like, Byzantine fault tolerance is essentially the area where the fault scenarios are completely open. It's a super arbitrary, essentially anything is allowed. So this was something which was kind of, I was super curious to see, like, what we can do if some number of people can do whatever they want. It sounds a bit, you know, like impossible. And there indeed are some fundamentally impossibility results. But just, you know, being in this mental model where, you know, we want to do something together and then a subset of us can do whatever they want. And we still are able to provide some guarantees. It's like theoretically, I think, a fascinating problem.
Do you think, as somebody who's not only specialized, but also had the chance to, I would say, implement it on a bigger scale, because obviously Cosmos is not a small project, like on page 25 or whatever, right? It's a top project with a lot of other projects working on the Tendermint. So would you say, as somebody who's involved in it, has the implementation been as good as the idea itself has been? Or is there still a long, long, long way to go where we can say, okay, the implementations of distributed consensuses are now at a place where we can safely say, oh my God, this is really good, it's working, we don't need anything else. Like, how far away are we from this step as somebody who's been involved in it so much?
This is something which is kind of pretty interesting. In my view, I think that implementation of Tendermint is like super solid. And so both the protocol-wise and implementation-wise. Of course, we can always talk about improvements, but the maturity of the protocol understanding and, you know, protocol design and maturity of the implementation and testing in Tendermint is pretty amazing. And also what is really interesting is that Tendermint opens the space for almost like a new, what we call in theory, system model. It's a GOSI-based Byzantine fault tolerant consensus engine. It was never done before. So there is essentially, there is a stream of knowledge, of understanding, which is going from the industry to academia, where like we kind of already did something. And now people in academia are trying to help us and work with us to formalize this and to expand this thing. And so in that sense, I think that in general, I would say the blockchain is absolutely fascinating area because you have more or less a lot of very fundamental computer science fields and research happening on the first line of development. And so in that sense, I think also it's like for also young researchers, it's an amazing place to be because you're able to experiment, you're able to design new stuff in a model which are never done before. And you're able to directly, you know, like implement the stuff and people are using it. And the feedback cycle is like super fast. This is absolutely amazing. So if you compare this with academia where, you know, you work on something, you go through the review process, you implement prototype, and then people might never look at this or never use this thing. Although it could be like super cool idea and super sound. Here, if you come up with something interesting, it might be in production like 3 months later. If I can just tell you anecdote, like what happened in Tendermint, because now we have these multiple entities in the Cosmos ecosystem, and we, of course, collaborate together, but we don't have necessarily like the common timelines. So we actually operate in parallel. And then we were working on a fork accountability protocol for Tendermint, like formalizing this, designing this thing. And this is also, I think, really a fascinating theoretical work. And it was sort of not even in a super ready-to-be-used shape. We were working on this, but then there was something else. You know, there was IBC focus, so we kind of switched to this thing. And then we haven't talked with the Interchain Berlin team for some time. And then at some point, I discover, you know, they asked me for peer review, and I look, and they implement the stuff. And I was like, oh my God, like, it's not even done. You know, they implemented this thing. It's absolutely amazing. You know, the speed with which we move, like, from idea to implementation is, like, amazing.
It's interesting to speak about product growth. One project that pop up in my mind is Cardano. What do you think about this project?
At some point, I was going through their white paper and also like technical reports. I think it's a sound project, and they manage also to hire an amazing team. So they are definitely doing super cool stuff. And they're also, I think, in terms of goals, we're pretty aligned. So they also want to have more correct and reliable software. And they're also close to the formal verification. These are, I would say, the stuff where we really share the same value. On the other side, they have a bit different approach just in terms of like the core protocol they're doing. And the people who are designing the core protocols are coming from the security background. I personally have a bit of trouble to, let's say, feel comfortable reading those papers, because it's just a different vocabulary.
It's okay. Everybody does. It's okay. Just okay. that.
So like, I don't want, let's say, to say by any chance that it's not good. It's just that it's not something I get used to. I was a bit struggling to figure out what's really happening there. But I think it's a really good project. Also, they have tight collaboration with academia. That's also something where we are also doing and trying to expand on this. And I'm really happy seeing this kind of project. I really believe that what we are trying to do, the way how I'm thinking like more general about the blockchain, is that we are trying to automate in a kind of distributed way some tasks. We are trying to automate more and more of this task. And the way we are coding these automation scripts, if you think about this, like in different programming languages, is not ideal. Like it's super error prone. The tools are giving us a lot of flexibility. And then this flexibility also comes with bugs very frequently. And so I think that we really need, if you really want as a society to rely more on these automation scripts for like important areas, and there are more and more of our life, I think that we need to be able to do this in a more correct and more like sound way.
Definitely. And we do have a few questions about that as well. But the question that popped into my head now, while you're mentioning a lot academical research, and you mentioned young researchers as well. So a kind of obvious question, I think, from my side here, and I'm sure that Anna maybe would ask that as well, and everybody who's listening, what does a day of a researcher look like? Well, what does motivate a researcher to find the next research topic and to say, okay, here's distributed consensuses. I want to pick this particular thing and not this and write essays on it or test it or whatever. How does it happen? I mean, do you wake up and take a random book? Tell me about it.
I could just, of course, talk about from my, let's say, small experience and people I know. But normally there are some like seminal works, which are, there are like seminal papers, and you always start from there, trying to figure out what are, let's say, some common laws. And in distributed computing, we also have this frequently impossibility results, which are giving us boundaries, you know, what is possible, what is not. In pure academia, you try to figure out some scenario or some use case which is not covered. So it's more like trying some niche, and then you try to develop something more interesting there. Motivations are publishing papers. This is how you get recognition, this is how you're able to get your thesis, you're able to get promoted, to get professorship position, etc. It's sort of oriented mostly by somehow publication. And this is something which is maybe not ideal, because you are not necessarily having like hooks with the real world. So like you're trying to come up with something, and then we hope that maybe it would be relevant or not. We don't need necessarily in academia to produce only, you know, relevant or practically relevant results. If you talk about like being a researcher in more like industrial concept, it's a bit different story, because we don't need to invent challenges. Challenges are everywhere. Essentially, more or less, whenever you look around, there are challenges. And then it's really about trying to figure out what is like the most sane way to address them. And also like having in mind that people will implement this. So we cannot go like fancy with like super complex stuff. Simplicity is definitely a kind of requirement, or it's very important. And also being able to communicate what you do. This is something which is also, I kind of realized this myself after I joined All in Bits. If you're not able to talk with the people in their language, you are sort of, you're missing a point. Like you can design ideal or beautiful protocol yourself, but if you're not able to express it to the engineers in their terms, it will never be used. Like it's a completely lost target.
This is a very interesting point to see that communication is still communication, right? And another question is, when you obviously find like a challenge, like you said, the challenges always surround us. And when you start to look for an answer, do you usually try to avoid other people's work previously on the challenge? Or the opposite, you research first what others did and they trying to implement your own solution. What's your way of working?
There is something interesting in blockchain space. The normal approach I would do is look for related work. And like before we figure out something new, we try to see what people did before and then try to extend it or if possible, you know, reuse the work being done. What is kind of interesting is that if we talk about the most of blockchain research, there are some fundamental results there. But then there are a lot of problems which are the system model is changed. Like we have, for example, now many participants, or we have these different sort of fault models. Now we have rational nodes, like people are not just arbitrary bad or good. They are, there could be variance. The spectrum is more like broad there. And then also we're talking about a gossip-based network. So all those stuff are just changing completely the problem. You cannot easily reuse the algorithms which are designed for different system mode. So there is a sound base. And I think it's really good idea to look of always like what is done and not reinvent the wheel. But in reality, it's true that like in a lot of cases, we need to sort of design things from scratch because it hasn't been done before. And one thing which is sort of also interesting is that the amount of like technical reports or papers produced in blockchain space is huge. And I frankly, you know, at some point I stopped following because it's almost impossible to follow what's happening. So I sort of try to do my work and just look at what is related to that bit narrow focus. So it's really hard to catch up with everything what's happening outside.
Yes, definitely. So what sources of information do you use daily?
You mean like in general, like to do the work?
I mean information about project, tech, and what is going on that. Yeah, and on the industry. Maybe it's some resources, research, blogs, or any kind of information sources.
I'm registered to the mailing list where the person is like reading a paper per day. It's called the morning paper, and it's Adrian Kohler is a guy who is doing this. And it's really cool because he's following a top computer science conferences and he's writing summaries, but these are really amazing summaries of the papers. You get a very technical and sound summary of paper and you have a link to a paper. If you don't have, you know, a lot of time, you can just read a summary. And he's not reviewing just the latest papers, but also he's looking at this seminal one. Sometimes he has a series, like, so you have like paper, which is like in 70s, and then, you know, there are 3-4 ending with like the latest paper at like top computer science conference. This is really pretty cool. Also something which inside Informal and the whole ecosystem around like with these companies, we have people who are much more active on Twitter or other social media than I am. And then I'm getting a lot of these cool hints, like what should I read from them, you know? So they figure out the paper. So I don't know that this is like, but we recently had a colleague who is now co-founding Lazy Ledger Project, Ishmael. I don't know if you guys maybe met Ishmael. He's an amazing guy. And so he found a paper, which is published by some people from Google, on essentially how they are thinking about really like using formal verification techniques in like everyday software engineering. It's a fascinating work, and it's super close to what we are trying to do with Informal. Bucky is also a source of amazing blogs or relevant papers. So I'm kind of a bit lazy, and like I have 3 daughters, so I don't have a plenty of, let's say, free time outside work. So I'm sort of lazy and relying on them to tell me, yeah, you should look at this. And this is how I pick my reading list, basically.
That's interesting, because you're not the first researcher who has kind of put it the same way. Obviously, you're not talking about the specific paper you mentioned, the specific newsletter, sorry, but this is very similar to what I've heard before as well. Going back to Informal Systems and to Bucky, when we had Bucky on the show about like 5 months ago or something like that, 4 months ago, he talked about his vision for Informal Systems, how one day it will be used by a large amount of organizations to minimize the bureaucracy and you have some standards in place that can modernize outdated protocols of how organizations work underneath the engine. I think you got the idea. And what's your personal vision for the work that you guys do in Informal Systems? Obviously, you mentioned the audits and of course, the distributed systems, and that makes perfect scientific sense. But what's your like great vision for what you do and your colleagues do?
There are several elements there, and something I am personally probably not mostly necessarily interesting, just what I'm kind of driving in Informal. It's an, let's say, a line of product development and research where we are trying to change the way we develop software. And so this is quite a long-term goal, but we start from the premise that the way we develop software today, it's more art and not like a serious engineering discipline. And I think we all know this, and there's nothing new there. Now, the fundamental question we are trying to answer is how we can do this so that it's like better. It has a better quality. It's like more predictable. Like if you think about analogy, we want to design, to implement software the way we develop bridges. This is also something analogy, which also people several times mentioned. But it should be sound. It should be correct by construction and not like by chance. And security audit is more like our short-term way to, let's say, have a meaningful impact on the ecosystem, trying to contribute our expertise, making software more reliable by finding bugs and trying to have these formal models, which people can use to drive their test suites. So they have kind of the sanity net in which they can operate and still be, let's say, secure by chance. This is more like a short-term goal. Like right now, we are changing the way we develop software internally. We're trying to help other people. But if you talk about like the vision or long-term goal, what I would like to see, and I would not mention, you know, when, but sooner than later, is that we are using as our normal development tools something which is more, let's say, correct. And our way to address this is to rely on math. So math, it's a language, if you want. It has a clear rules. It's a deterministic. And so we can really reason about like correctness in that language. And we are trying to use this through the formal methods to somehow apply those techniques and tools in our everyday development life. We are, of course, just starting this journey. I don't expect to have like super short term, but we are trying to do it in a reasonable way. Like we want to improve development experience. Let's say every year it should be better. We should be able to have the tools which are more integrated with development lifecycle. It's a very natural that when we develop software and let's say 20 years from now, if I can just put some number there, that it's more correct. We decide what we want to do and we have a certainty that when we finish the process, it stays as a breach. It's almost like sure that there is a bug there. It's just the question when we'll find it. And so I think that it's like fundamentally wrong. And so this is more or less like the vision. We, of course, they're, you know, informal and with Bucky. Bucky's like has plenty of ideas. And so, of course, we want to do something with this correct software. So it's not just about developing correct software. We all have informal, we share the same values, and we are also trying to allow people to use this software to have, let's say, secure platform for coordination so that like the local economies can be able to do something meaningful for them and that people could be able to coordinate in a more correct and fast and efficient way. This is more like, I would say, a bit orthogonal. So like to be able to do this, I think our tools, our coordination tools, our automation scripts need to be more correct. If we talk about vision, then in my head, we have these two paths which should ideally cross at some point. Like end goal is not necessarily having correct software because we are human being and like we have needs which doesn't necessarily have to do anything with software. Software should be there to help us to simplify the stuff, to be more efficient, to be able to do stuff we are not able to do without. So the software on its own is not goal. So the goal is to be able to provide people with the possibility to write automation scripts in a decentralized way. Let's say some community of people can decide what they want to do together, and they can have a trust in the automation script in a software they put together that it's a correct, that it will really respect their values. There would be no way for an individual to take advantage in a, let's say, evil way. And so it will be fair, it will be efficient. So this is more or less the dream. And then right now, we don't have tools which would allow us to do this. So we need to develop them. And so like ideally, these two paths will cross at some point and then we would be able to do something meaningful.
Is that something that in lines with your personal life goals as a researcher? Because this is obviously the vision of the company or the project. Of course, it's a silly question because you already did it, but I will ask it anyways. Is that something that calls within you?
No, it's not a silly question. I think that we are doing the stuff, let's say our professional life is not necessarily super aligned with our values. And I think that we are facing this today. And I think it's a problem. And not many people can do this. So I'm trying to align these values. And I'm happy, you know, that Informal provides also people. This is also what we are really striving hard in Informal, to provide people such means that their personal values should be aligned with the company goals. There is a lot of tension there. Like it's not simple. But personally, I really think that we should somehow really take advantage of the technology, which is, let's say, provided to us or which we developed, to do more meaningful stuff. Just, you know, like developing digital casinos doesn't seem to be a very meaningful goal. I understand that it's a step and I accept that it's a fine on a trajectory. But if we are not incentivized and motivated to do something more meaningful at the end, then it's probably a waste of time.
I have so many questions. I'm a bit lost. But okay, let's take it like in the direction of, in the same direction what we're talking about. And you mentioned spectrums as well and goals and achievements and achieving the greater goal. Would you agree with the sentence that decentralization is a spectrum?
Yeah, definitely.
So in your opinion, where should companies of the future strive to be on that spectrum? Does that depend on something that they do? Or should it be kind of like a standard that says, okay, all companies should be on that side of the spectrum, or companies that do casinos, like you just mentioned, right, should be on that side of the spectrum or can be. So how does that work out?
To be very frank, I don't have answer to this question. I think that, let's say, to be also clear what I mean here, I also don't think that we necessarily should have answer to that question. What we are trying to do is to develop technology which will enable people to do stuff or to choose a context and setup which makes most sense for them. And I think that this is not necessarily, we don't have this right now. So like we are more or less what we are providing in terms of computing is a model where you more or less have centralized infrastructure services, and then you are sort of, you're trusting them, and then they write their computation model. We have a lot of these third-party companies which are sort of monopolizing different communities and governing them, defining the rules, because probably there is no other way right now, or the other way is not appealing enough. So we need definitely as a more like a overall community, I think, of people who are working in this decentralized infrastructure, we need to be better at coming up with the tools which will give people possibility to satisfy their needs. And then I really don't believe that it should be sort of mandatory stuff. I don't really think that everything should be decentralized in future. There are perfect applications which really perfectly fit centralized settings, and it should still be there. But if some company or some community wants to do something differently, there should be a way to do this. And I think that what we are trying to do is we are trying to develop tools to enable people to do this. And what we are also hoping for doing more in the future with Informal is connecting with different communities which have such needs and then try to understand how we can help them. We, of course, like we are a group of people. It's like 20 of us. We have personal values or goals, or we are more, maybe something is more appealing than maybe some other domain. And so we might be in the future trying to use technology to, let's say, implement some of those applications ourselves, to try to do something, let's say, what makes sense for us. But this is one, let's say, one side of the goal. But I think that the impact we would like to make would be better, definitely, if we are able to engage with other communities or people with the needs and try to enable them to satisfy their needs.
I really like what you're saying there, because as somebody who's spent like his last 10 years, and I'm not over exaggerating here, on researching distributed ledger technologies, consensus algorithms, and so on and so forth, the biggest question that I always stumble upon for myself is how far should decentralization, decentralized spectrum, should be pushed towards? Where is that boundary where I'm like saying, okay, be decentralized, but by saying be decentralized, I am not being decentralized, right? So honestly, it's great to see that this is a big problem that people are working on, and I'm glad. So sorry I interrupted you, I'm gonna say something there.
No, maybe I haven't really understood your questions well, but if you talk about like the scale or how far we can go, there I would also like us to be pragmatic and to say, okay, like having 10,000 validators or whatever, like the servers running our decentralized application is good enough. We don't know. Like if once we realize that it's not good enough and there is a use case where we need to scale to 1 million, I would be super happy to work on this. This would be maybe more like this academic view on the stuff. And I know that some labs are working on this. Let's do GOSI protocols, which can scale to, you know, millions of nodes. You know, why not? But I don't know whether there is interesting use case for this right now.
It's definitely something that, I mean, consensus algorithms and especially proof of stake and the cons and the pros of delegated proof of stake or selected democracy, right, as I would like to call it, is a whole topic that I would love to discuss with you again. I think that's going to take us at least. Personally, I have so many things to say on that. And I know to ask you, not to say, but to ask you, because I love what you're saying here. And I think I would definitely want to speak about it again. But a different question. Sorry, I went off completely off track. So we're going to try to have some wrap-up questions. The first question is, as a researcher into DLTs and somebody who's working with instruments for companies, in your personal opinion or vision, the typical company of the future, what does it look like? What is the differences maybe to today's companies?
I think that hopefully we'll be using more, definitely more and more tools to communicate between us. I have a feeling that we'll be seeing also explosion of all kinds of communication tools. And we are seeing it recently, like with Notion or Roam. And I expect to see more and more stuff for different, more particular, let's say, subjects. Okay, maybe something for like software development, something for different kinds of skills or like communities. But I still feel that we are really not communicating efficiently. It's not about being, you know, like remote first or now a lot of companies are going remote. It's also probably true for also company which like sit in the same room. That just being able to talk efficiently and knowing what you mean, it's in my view, most probably like the biggest problem we have right now. And I somehow expect to see more improvement on that front. I think this is really a step we need to sort of overcome. we need to have a more clean and deterministic way to talk with each other and to have, you know, when I'm saying something, people understand what I mean. And like, there is no way to sort of ambiguity there. That's one thing. The other thing is that also, and this is maybe more like probably Bucky was talking about this, is like being able to have better understanding of company state. I think right now in a small, and I also have like a small company where it's like a super small, but even for us, it's always a challenge to figure out, you know, what are our like obligations? Are we kind of correct? The laws is continuously changing. And if you talk about more complex company, we have different operations happening in parallel, like, you know, hiring, marketing, sales, development, being all this stuff in sync and having essentially being able to understand what's happening and to understand, you know, like how good or bad we're doing something, or if we are like from legal perspective, are we correct or not? I see also a lot of improvement on that front. I don't know whether I sort of answered to your question, but
I think you're talking in the direction like which you, it makes sense to me anyways, but you're talking, we're describing the problem. And from that, I can kind of paint the picture in my head that answers the question kind of. So hopefully the companies of the future, the first thing for them is to understand much better than we do today, their own goals, their own motivation and the communication between how to achieve those things. So that is, if I understand you correctly. Thanks. That's really great. And Anna, I think you had a wrapping up question there, like a resume question.
What are the three projects you are excited about? It can be a project outside of Cosmos ecosystem or inside of Cosmos ecosystem, whatever.
I know that probably it would be more politically correct to mention something outside Cosmos, but I think that IBC is really the project which has, let's say, most my attention right now. I think it's the most probably relevant project in the whole ecosystem, because essentially IBC will enable us to compose the stuff, let's say, to integrate different silos, which are right now individual. And it opens so many space. Like it's again, a sort of this kind of communication problem. We can really go to the next level. We will be able to better integrate, to better coordinate, to exchange values in a more like standard and efficient way. And in that sense, I'm sort of looking forward, seeing not just, you know, IBC, of course, like we are expect IBC to play an important role there, but in general, like how we can collaborate better between these different amazing communities and blockchain systems, how we can integrate them and how we can provide to the society something more meaningful, developer and society more generally, you know, something more interesting and useful.
Is there a favorite project within the Cosmos ecosystem? Not favorite in terms of how they do, but the idea maybe that's something that interests you. You don't have to name one if there isn't one.
I'm sort of interested in seeing Cosmos integrated with Ethereum. So there is a project called Peggy, which should allow us this capability. Let's say that for now, this is something which I think it's super important. Like just having this bridge between these two communities, I think will bring a lot of good stuff to Cosmos and I hope also to Ethereum. I'm really excited to see this happening.
I have a question after the last, which wasn't supposed to be. So would you say that the Peggy, in your opinion, is bigger in terms of the possibilities it will open up than what Chainsafe is doing with Ethermint? Which is completely different, but
Ethermint, it's definitely a super important project. Just Peggy is something which I think it's important in a sense that it allows us this really the first like bridging capability. And then once we connect these two systems, then we are opening a new space for like development and interesting possibility. Ethermint, it's also a very good example. I think that it will probably maybe, you know, like it will play its space potentially, you know, in some synergy with Peggy, or it would be, you know, it will have its own bridge. I don't know what is really the story there. We also definitely need in Cosmos space more like smart contracts like platform. This is definitely something we are looking forward to seeing more in the future.
Yep. Hopefully that we will see a lot of those bridges, not just to Ethereum development. I really like the vision that you guys have in Informal. This is not the first time we all hearing it. And it's really cool to understand that you guys are keeping that vision. Thanks a lot for your time, Jarko, and thanks a lot for sharing your vision, your opinions, and I really hope that we can do this again in the near future, because I think we really haven't touched like more than the tip of the iceberg with what you have to say about algorithms and about distributed computing, and I think we would love to hear more about it if you have time in the future, of course.
Sure, of course, like I would be happy, and I really enjoyed talking with you guys, and thank you once more for having me here. It was really cool.
Thanks, everybody, for joining in, and see you next time on Citizen Cosmos. Thanks. Bye-bye.